immigration judge, or an immigration judge might side with ICE's interpretation of the law and deny them even a hearing for bond. And so people who have no criminal histories or non-serious criminal histories, who have U.S. citizen children in the United States, will not even have the opportunity to show that they shouldn't be held in detention.
So this will fill, guarantee that they will need more jails built when people don't get bond. It means they stay, obviously, in these jails longer.
Yeah, you know, obviously, we understand that this administration is, you know, using every tool that it has to target the immigrant community, to scare the immigrant community, to hopefully, on their end, you know, discourage people from staying in the United States. And so what they're trying to do here is they're creating a national policy of detention to fill the beds that, unfortunately, Congress recently funded. Congress gave $45 billion to ICE to build more detention capacity, which is 13 years of current funding that has to be spent within 4 years. So we're going to see a massive expansion of detention, and this policy is to fill those beds.
And so as we see that massive expansion of detention, we're going to move next into a segment on what these jails look like. We're going to go to a Human Rights Watch report. Adriel Orozco, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Senior Policy Counsel at the American Immigration Council. When we come back, we'll look at the report, You Feel Like Your Life Is Over, abusive practices at three Florida immigration detention centers since January 2025. Back in 20 seconds.
Se me va a tirar, mejor tenga cuidado pa' que no falle. Los vientos cuentan mi historia, vivo al principio y al final. Los ríos corren por mis venas, definiendo mi libertad. La montaña me ve, sonríe, que junto a ella no hay rival. Yo no como cuento cualquiera, por dentro llevo mi verdad. Fue le le le. Fue le le le. Si me va a tirar, mejor tenga cuidado pa' que no falle.
If You're Coming For Me by Maku Sound System, here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. You Feel Like Your Life Is Over. That's the title of a new report released jointly by Americans for Immigrant Justice, the Sanctuary of the South, and Human Rights Watch. It details dangerous and abusive conditions at three immigration detention centers in Miami, Florida, since Trump returned to office. One of the detained people they spoke to said detention officers made men eat while shackled with their hands behind their backs. One man said, quote, "We had to bend over and eat off the chairs with our mouths like dogs." The report also describes how detained immigrants are routinely denied access to legal counsel and critical medical care. Some have been held incommunicado in solitary confinement as an apparent punishment for seeking mental health care. For more, we're joined by Belkis Villa, an associate director in Human Rights Watch's Crisis, Conflict and Arms Division, author of the new report, You Feel Like Your Life Is Over, abusive practice at three immigration detention centers. Belkis Villa, thanks so much for joining us from Washington. We have spoken to you about abusive conditions in countries around the world. We're talking to you right now about what's happening here in the United States and Florida. Talk about what you found.
What we found was that since January 20th of this year, there has been an upsurge in immigrants being detained, including in particular in Florida. And what this meant was that tons of people were being brought to these immigration detention centers. One of the ones we look at, Chrome, within the first 3 months of the year was suddenly at, you know, two, three times its capacity in terms of the number of people being brought. And with that overcrowding came truly horrific conditions, unsanitary conditions, people being unable to get access to medical care, both to see medical health professionals and to get key treatment that they need for chronic health conditions, women being brought to a male-only detention center, being held there and denied any access to medical care because they were told this is a male-only facility.
In a TikTok video that went viral in March, an unidentified immigrant from Mexico, detained at the Chrome ICE jail in Miami, begs for help as he secretly records the inhumane conditions inside his overcrowded holding cell. Several other immigrant men are seen sleeping on the floor. And the significance of what it is showing.
So what we see in that video is exactly what was described by these men that were held at Chrome Detention Center. These cells are being used for the quote-unquote processing period when people are first brought in. Now, these cells are only meant to hold a small number of people for a matter of hours. Those conditions you saw, those are men who were held in there for 1 week, 2 weeks. In those rooms, they do not have regular access to showers. They're in frigid temperatures with the air conditioning blasting. They're sleeping on concrete floors for days. Some of the rooms don't have, regular access to a sink and soap to wash people's hands. And as I mentioned, those same cells were being used at some point to hold women being brought to Chrome. Again, a male-only facility. The women told me that in their cell they had a toilet, but with the way that the windows were only partially glazed over, male detainees from other cells could actually stand on a chair and look in and watch them while they were using the toilet.
So if you can talk about the people who have died in detention in Florida.
What we saw across all three detention centers that we looked at was really a concerning and chronic lack of access to appropriate medical care. And what we saw was that people with, you know, chronic health conditions who where their records were on file, it was clear that they had diabetes or they had HIV or asthma or any number of conditions. They were not being given regular access to their medication. And in some cases, people begging to see a doctor were not given access to a doctor. And in the case of two instances, a Ukrainian man, Maxim, who was brought in, you know, he was in very good health, his wife said, until he got brought to Chrome. He got sicker and sicker, was begging to see a doctor. He saw medical health professionals that were not prescribing him medication to address his illnesses. And we spoke to a cellmate who describes how in the middle of the night, suddenly he started foaming at the mouth, vomiting, defecated on himself. That day, again, he had been insisting to see a doctor and had not seen one. And he was taken away on a stretcher and then died. And there was also a Haitian woman the same age as Maxim, also 44. And we interviewed a woman who was in the cell opposite her who saw her collapsing.
This is Marie-Ange Blaise.
Exactly. This is Marie-Ange Blaise. And the woman we spoke to watched as it took far too long for a guard to come, as cellmates were screaming for a guard. The guard came, sauntered over, then walked away slowly before calling the medical team. They took, 10, 15 minutes to arrive, and then one signaled to the rest of the group, it's too late, and the woman was taken away and then pronounced dead.
So she was held at Broward Transitional Center, BTC. You also report on Federal Detention Center and, of course, Chrome in Miami. Can you talk about what it means when when these jails are privatized? They're companies, and what role do they play in, for example, when they don't have enough food for people? You save money by not giving them so much food.
Absolutely. So Broward Transitional Center, BTC, and Chrome are both run by private companies that have contracts from ICE to run them. At a facility like Chrome, as I said, you know, within the first 3 months of the year, they became, you know, far over capacity of the facility. And detainees explained to me, those that were already detained in 2024, the change in conditions. Suddenly, they weren't getting, substantial and warm breakfasts anymore. Suddenly, their meal portions for lunch and dinner were cut. They couldn't even eat in the canteen anymore. They were required to eat in their cells, which is still the case because the facility is so overcrowded. And as you said, that's a financial matter. That, you know, that's a way of saving on the money being spent on food. When we wrote to the companies that are running Chrome and BTC, we got no responses to our substantial allegations. One company simply wrote back and said, you have to talk to ICE. We can't respond to any of your allegations.
What exactly is Human Rights Watch calling for now? I mean, these three detention centers in Florida are a small example of the mass expanding detention complex that is growing across this country. From places and swamps like the Everglades, what the Republicans have called alligator Alcatraz, to make it sound a bit cute, to the new expanding detention centers on military bases.
Absolutely. I mean, as you said, this is just a small example of a system that is abusive and is treating immigrants in detention in a dehumanizing manner. One immediate thing that could be done by the government that would really limit the number of people who are at risk of ending up in these facilities is to reinstate programs like the humanitarian parole and TPS programs, programs that invited people from Cuba, from Haiti, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Afghanistan to come to this country lawfully. And these people were told they could come to America and got this protection until the situation in the country of their origin improved. And instead, suddenly we saw a political decision taken to strip these people of their status. And now all of these people, as their status gets terminated, are at risk of being detained at these detention centers. So that's one very easy and quick fix. But, you know, there are also so many alternatives to detention for immigrants. It was ICE itself in 2004 that developed an alternatives to detention program, a program that by many measures was effective. Why are we seeing a system that is using detention centers as the default when we're showing very clearly these detention centers are carrying out abuses, and not just abuses of international human rights law, but abuses of ICE's very own detention standards?
What does it mean, and maybe you can't answer this, but when a ICE jail is placed on a military base, already Congress members who have every right to go at any time unannounced to an ICE jail to investigate, to inspect, are having trouble getting in under the Trump administration. But if they then have to get not only permission from ICE, but from the Pentagon to get onto a military base—
That's of extreme concern. So much of the immediate solution that's needed to address and rein in these abuses is oversight. And oversight includes an ability for those in power to visit these facilities and to ensure that abuses are not being carried out. What we heard from people at facilities like Chrome is that when the management of the facilities and ICE found out there was going to be a visit, you know, a few nights before, suddenly 100 men would get transferred out, a wall would get repainted so that, the reality of the facility and its overcrowding would not be properly seen. So when you're talking about facilities that are even harder to get access to, it really means we're talking about a black hole that does not allow for appropriate oversight of conditions.
Belkis Bile, we want to thank you for being with us. Associate Director in Human Rights Watch's Crisis, Conflict, and Arms Division. We'll link to your new report. You feel like your life is over. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the federal government begins to implement some $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts called for in President Trump's budget bill, which gives massive tax breaks to the wealthy, We end today's show with a new investigative documentary that examines the moral dilemmas and profit motives surrounding assisted dying that members of the disabled community could face. It's called Life After, directed by acclaimed filmmaker Reed Davenport. As one reviewer put it, Davenport is uniquely positioned to tell the story. He himself has cerebral palsy. This is the trailer for Life After.
Elizabeth Bouvet is asking for help. Trapped in a useless body, she says she deserves the right to die quietly.
And what was your purpose in being admitted to Riverside General Hospital?
I'll only starve myself to death.
The more I researched, the more I began to think that Bouvet was still alive.
Requests for medical assistance in dying are increasing across the country. We're beginning to hear more stories about people feeling it's their only recourse from excruciating circumstances.
I didn't want to really end my life, but it really just came down to a matter of funding at that point.
The health system is basically going to tell you, you should kill yourself, because that's the cheapest option.
Many people are afraid of disability. They've never had to interact with it before. The decision makers are really ruining our chances of surviving.
This film will be dismissed as cynicism. But the death of disabled people has been justified for so long.
Doctors encouraged me to pull the plug.
This film is not about suicide. It's about the phenomenon that leaves disabled people desperate to find their place in the world that perpetually rejects them.
She's very bright, she's intelligent, she's attractive, but so what?
I need to find her. There are too many unanswered questions.
That's the trailer for the new investigative documentary, Life After, directed by Reed Davenport and produced by Colleen Cassingham with Multitude Films. They both appear in the film. I spoke to them on Monday. Congratulations on winning the U.S. Documentary Special Jury Award at Sundance, where the film premiered earlier this year. I wanted to start off by asking you about why you made this film and how it ties into this current moment where we're going to see something like, in the next few years, 17 million people losing their health insurance, with millions losing their Medicaid. Reed.
I read about Bouvet about 8 years ago. I was instantly drawn to her story because many disabled activists who identify as progressive also are against assisted suicide. So I was very interested in that friction. And then when I figured out she could possibly be alive, that was when I knew that this was a film. Unfortunately, this film is growing in relevance day by day with the Medicaid cuts. Medicaid keeps disabled people alive, but barely. If you are on government assistance, you are probably below the poverty line. So cutting this back further will only deepen abject poverty and drop disabled people to early graves.
And Colleen, if you can talk about your involvement with this film.
Sure. Reed brought this film to me and to my team at Multitude Films back in 2020 or 2021. And it was around the time that Canada had just expanded its assisted dying legislation made to include eligibility for disabled people on the basis of disability. And so, you know, I knew this was a film that we wanted to be involved with just because of the sort of personal political perspective expansion it had for me. You know, I personally thought I was for assisted suicide legislation. It seems like it to me, it was a matter of personal choice and bodily autonomy, which I'm deeply committed to. And it was working on this film with Reed that really changed my perspective to understand that these questions are really about what kind of society we want to be and how we want to care for and uphold each other's dignity. And there are so many layers of ableism and systemic failure that influence the ways that assisted suicide legislation is able to be implemented that make it so dangerous for disabled people. So, you know, with the Medicaid cuts on the horizon, the reason I feel this film is so important right now is because people with disabilities already experience huge health disparities. And so when you introduce a policy like assisted suicide, it takes a group of people who are already incredibly marginalized by our system and gives the institutions and the people with power a profit motive for denying those people care.
This film is particularly relevant here in New York as Governor Hochul has a bill on her desk, which she has not yet signed. Can you explain its significance?
New York is said to be one of about 12 states that would allow assisted suicide for people who are terminally ill. However, we know that abuse happens. We know that disabled people who are not dying are able to use doctors to wiggle their way into this line. For example, people who have diabetes are technically terminal without insulin, so that can be used to allow someone with diabetes who is not dying to access assisted suicide legally.
I want to go to another clip from Life After. It's with Melissa, the wife of Michael Hixon, an Austin man who in 2017 suffered an anoxic brain injury that made him blind and damaged his spinal cord. The hospital that was treating him wanted to end life-saving measures when he needed to be treated for COVID at that Austin, Texas hospital.
Michael went into sudden cardiac arrest while he was driving me to work. As a result of that, he had an anoxic brain injury. He was blind and had a spinal cord injury that caused him to be quadriplegic. Several doctors kept saying to me, we can just let him go. You know, if you want us to, we can. In fact, they encouraged it. My goal for him was to go to a place where they specialized in care for people with brain injuries and spinal cord injuries. That was never what they wanted. I was villainized for trying to get the care that Michael needed the whole time. I was always encouraged to let him go, to pull the plug, to not treat. It would just be easier.
Did you expect doctors to be discriminatory, or was this a shock for you?
I think as most people believe that doctors are healers, that they're there to help you get better. I never thought that a doctor would ever question life.
So that was Melissa Hixon being interviewed by Reed Davenport, the director of Life After. At the end of this interview, Reed, you hug Melissa. Talk about why you reached out to her.
And initially we reached out to her because Michael's story was so devastating, and it wasn't getting the attention that it needed. And we were asking Melissa to bear some very deep, pretty new wounds. So during the interview, I think it was just about trying to be a decent person, recognizing we were there to do something difficult and trying our best to ease the pain and make it to make it less hard.
I want to go to another clip from your film, Life After, where you speak to a Canadian man named Michael Calazan, who has spinal muscular atrophy. He lost his mother, who is his primary caretaker, and has considered dying through Canada's MAID program. That's M-A-I-D, Medical Assistance in Dying.
When we heard Mom's diagnosis, I had basically three thoughts. My first thought was, OMG, Mom's going to die soon. My second thought was, OMG, I'm going to die shortly thereafter. And then I thought, OMG, how do I get my together? I didn't want to really end my life, but, you know, it really just came down to a matter of funding at that point.
There's a facade of universal healthcare in this country that claims to take care of anyone who gets ill. But the truth is, we have these points of crisis in our healthcare system where people are falling through, not cracks, but massive openings in the system.
That's Ash Kelly, a Canadian journalist. And before that, Michael Calazan said he didn't really want to die, but since his mother was his main caretaker, Reed, in this story, what's surprising, as it's pointed out, is that Canada has national health care.
Yeah, I think as Americans, especially if you're on the left, you look up to Canada as this more liberal country where everybody has health care, but their health care, even if it's nationalized, is extremely overburdened and it's on the verge of collapse. The wait lines are endless. It can take years to see a specialist or even a therapist. So health care is by no means a given in Canada.
That's Reed Davenport, director of the new investigative documentary Life After, and producer Colleen Cassingham with multiple films. The film has won major awards at Sundance. It's at Film Forum in New York through Thursday, and over the summer will be coming to many cities through one-night-only screenings with conversations with movement leaders and activists and thinkers. The cities include Philadelphia, Chicago, Austin, Miami, Atlanta, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, Portland, Des Moines, Iowa, and Middlebury, Vermont. There will also be virtual companion screenings as well, so the film will be accessible. You can check their website, lifeafterfilm.com, for locations and dates. And you can go to our website to see our 2022 interview with Reed about his first documentary, I Didn't See You There, in which he, as a disabled filmmaker, reflects on the portrayal of disability in media and popular culture. We have job openings. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Safwa Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randall, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCorbett, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. To see our Democracy Now! Video and audio podcast, you can go to where you like to get your podcasts. We're also all over social media. Tell your friends about Democracy Now! We are corporate-free, people-powered. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are now listening to CJSS 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
This